Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and it's my pleasure to be joined again by Stephen Wirth, along with Carl Jaspers, the author of Blood Oath, The Conspiracy to Murder Nicole Brown Simpson, softcover edition, Rainbow Books, 1996, just out. This book is about a white supremacist, or an alleged white supremacist. I believe it is an accurate book, although there are some questions about some of the information. About an alleged white supremacist conspiracy to not only murder Nicole Brown Simpson, but to frame O.J. Simpson, to polarize racial relations in the United States in anticipation of a race war, to discredit not only the judicial system, but also law enforcement, the LAPD in particular, by way of paving the way for a successful Nazi uprising. Stephen, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
It's a pleasure.
We've been talking now about your informant, codenamed Skinner, and this elite white supremacist strike team, which was to put together this operation, in addition to utilizing white supremacist cops within the LAPD, possibly recruited by Dennis Mahone. That's speculative, but your informant indicates that it was the Mahone recruiting effort that was largely responsible for this, was it not?
That's correct. That's correct again.
Once again, utilizing people within the forensics departments, utilizing a blood specialist, conceivably, although there's no proof, a fellow named Steve Colburn, an acquaintance of McVeigh, an individual who fits the profile given you by your man Skinner. They were going to plant, in addition to killing Nicole, they were going to plant O.J.'s blood and a number of other things at the crime scene.
And that's the way they had figured it out and put into their plan. They first analyzed what they would need to frame him, how to do it, and based on what we were told, they had actually his blood.
And they actually had a sample of O.J. Simpson's blood. How did Skinner maintain they got that?
Well, whoever it was had contact inside of one of the medical labs, and whether they got this in 92 or 93 or 94, they stored it. Whoever it was a DNA specialist, was aware of it. The plot was based on the knowledge that this blood was available, and that even if O.J. wasn't bleeding, they would plant that blood anyhow, and with the theory that the LAPD, with their rush, would just say he had either a cut lip or a bloody nose or something, and that that's where that blood came from.
The operation itself, Operation Thunderbolt, again, this Nazi psyop, and that's basically what Skinner maintained it was it not?
That's the way it was described.
Involved an elite, six-man white supremacist strike team. Could you tell us a little bit about the backgrounds of the people involved in this, at least as described to you by Skinner?
Well, they were put together, most of them were military or ex-police officers. But they were people who were highly trained in this type of operation. In other words, the ability to carry out an operation in strict secrecy. And the reason for the six was to eliminate just what happened with this Viper group, where they had informants in there, because it was on the heels of the attempted coup in the AME church bombing in Los Angeles, and the arrangements there with the NACP bombing in Tacoma, Washington, etc., where these people were picked up because of informants. So they kept it to six. The six originally were down there on surveillance, were then told at the end that they would be the ones who would actually carry it out. Prior to that, they had kept the secret for a period of months to see whether any information leaked out at all. So it was well put together, and the people were well trained.
Not only were they ex-military, but your informant indicates that many of these people had actually had extensive backgrounds in covert operations and even political assassinations while working for such organizations as the Green Beret.
That's correct. And some in Vietnam, where they probably did some of the very same things.
Again, so in talking about these people, one should not think of these as a bunch of, quote, skinheads, unquote, although many of them can be much more ferocious and much more competent than a lot of people think. But this was basically a covert operations specialist team.
That's right. I mean, it's very, very similar to the group that took Alan Berg out. They did their planning, they did their surveillance, and then they took him out. Same group took robbed several armored cars and got away with it. So this was not some fly-by-night organization, and the people today are led to believe that this is a totally bizarre and could never happen. Well, it happened then, and it happened again.
Again, the murder of Alan Berg in June of 1984 was 10 years before the killing of Ron and Nicole, according to your informant, by this CAUSE six-man strike team, and it was meant to observe the 10th anniversary of the order's execution of Alan Berg.
That's correct. And the in August of 93, and this happens to be a copyright Chicago Tribune, FBI say racial terror plot is genuine. And there's a quote. U.S. Attorney Mike Yamaguchi said federal agents investigating the July 20th bombing of an NAACP office in Tacoma, Washington, found documents suggesting white supremacist groups embarked on a racial terror campaign. We believe there was a larger conspiracy to incite riots, racial tension, and terrorism up and down the West Coast, Yamaguchi said yesterday in San Jose, California. Why nobody ever picked up on that in Los Angeles is beyond me, but the government tends to keep quiet what they want to keep quiet and publicize what they want to publicize.
There's a quote from author Edith Wharton who said, a frivolous society can only achieve dramatic significance through what its frivolity destroys. And I've cited that many times in connection with the O.J. Simpson case. I think the real villains in this society were the American people themselves, the media, the institutions. They all failed. I've discussed that at considerable length in other broadcasts, Stephen.
Yeah.
Back to your remarkable book and the chilling account in it. This six-man strike team by the Christian Aryan Underground Special Enforces, or CAUSE, an outgrowth of the Order of the Aryan Nations, with foreign backing, quite possibly German Nazi backing, although that's not absolutely clear. This group had basically a military law enforcement pedigree, I guess one could say, and many of them had actually been involved with covert operations, so-called black ops, in the past. The methodology and equipment they used was also characteristic, or that they used according to your informant, was also characteristic of intelligence operations and methodology. Could you tell us about the very sophisticated equipment that they brought to bear?
Yeah, they used equipment. In fact, we've got pictures of similar equipment within the book. They used telephones with scramblers. They used telephones for two-way communication that kind of skipped over frequencies. They used infrared video cameras, infrared binoculars. They used small recording devices. In fact, one of the devices was put into each of the intercom at Nicole Brown Simpson's house, and one was put into O.J. Simpson's telephone unit outside of his Rockingham house. Interesting enough, after somebody took the intercom off of Nicole Brown's house, this is after all the second it's been, and the wires were dug up, and at O.J. Simpson's house, that intercom is taped shut. So we don't know whether they were looking for it or somebody was looking for it or what happened, but we've got pictures before and after of those intercoms.
So again, not only were their phone lines tapped, according to your informants, but the intercom systems were electronically monitored and interdicted. Night vision infrared equipment, secure mobile scrambled communication systems, and personal communicators were utilized. This was basically an intelligence operation. This was a covert operation.
That's exactly right. I mean, some reason people look at, the skinheads that are running around and figure that, the bunch of Looney Tunes, and they're not capable of doing anything until they see some of the weaponry that these people are walking around with. They should have seen what's happened with the Vipers. In fact, there they had a telephone operator or someone within the telephone system that was able to get all of the telephone records of, turned out to be one of the informants. And the weapons that they had and the if it wasn't for the fact that there was a hunter out there walking in the woods, they probably would have pulled off whatever they were going to pull off.
We should note again that the infrastructure behind this highly trained and extremely effective, very intelligent, too, although their views are dramatically different from those held by a great many Americans. These are extremely intelligent, very competent, highly trained, and extremely highly motivated individuals. These are not a bunch of incompetents. They're not even mediocre. They're exceedingly good at what they do.
Well, William Pierce is a physicist who wrote the book. Bo Gritz and that whole group, they've appeared before Congress, and you would think that you were talking to professors of universities when they appeared before Congress, when they were talking about terrorism threats, etc.
William Pierce, the author of the Turner Diaries, the head of the National Alliance, arguably the most important or fastest-growing white supremacist group. Not, white supremacists, hell, are Nazis. He's a Ph.D.
That's correct.
He is a doctor of philosophy. I'm not sure if it's in physics or engineering, but the point is he's an extremely bright fellow. We've spoken about the military and law enforcement and covert operations backgrounds of this elite six-man team. We've spoken about the highly sophisticated equipment that they utilized. They obtained somehow a sample of O.J. Simpson's blood from one of their implants, codenamed Colby. We should note again that they had infiltrated the legal system. They'd infiltrated the coroner's office. They had infiltrated the medical infrastructure. And these people are around, and the degree of infiltration is enormous. I personally suspect, although this is not in your book, it would probably go all the way on up into the intelligence community, the military, and would involve some extremely powerful elements in this country. One of the things that they did, Stephen, according to your informant, to frame O.J. Simpson was to actually obtain some of O.J.'s possessions and clothing. Could you tell us about what they obtained, how they obtained it, and what they did with it?
Sure. What happened was they were, since January 1st, 1994, they were in place down in L.A. and were observing his house and the Nicole Brown Simpson's first location, and then the second one, which is the Bundy, where she moved to. But there was an earthquake. And during that earthquake, when they had workmen going in there, they went in. And they picked out, those Bruno Maglis are based on the informant, O.J. Simpson's. And they took them there, along with gloves out of the Bronco, and gloves out of the house. And that may be part of the reason, and it's in the book that talks about it, why the gloves didn't fit O.J. Simpson, because they may have been a mixture of gloves, left and right. But they went in there, and they took those gloves out during the earthquake, and they took out all the other material. They also took a statue of O.J.'s, which was part of the thing that they planned on, after O.J. was convicted, of coming forth just to prove they were in there. Very similar to the gal who was said she was raped by
Willie Kennedy Smith.
That's right, and who took the vase out,
mm-hmm.
To prove that she actually had been there.
Right.
So they had this pretty well planned out.
In addition to some of O.J.'s clothing, and with regard to the gloves, one of the things you point out is that Skinner speculates that they might have gotten the wrong gloves, possibly gloves belonging to his son, Arnell.
No, well, Arnell is the daughter. Jason.
The daughter. Yeah, Jason.
Could have been Jason.
Jason. The team, according to your informant at any rate, in addition to the watch cap, Bruno Magli shoes, and a pair of gloves, had one of their members wearing an O.J. Simpson mask.
That's right. This was the ultimate, and what they felt on that if they're going to be driving, because they also had a white Bronco.
And a white Bronco that had some particular ID tags.
That's right. Well, they took the license plates off of, because they didn't have time, and that's, part of the reason that this, if people had looked closely at the timeline, which is going to be, I guess, in Killing Time, a new book that's going to come out by
Donald Freed,
where they analyze that, they would see there isn't enough time to do all the things they say. Well, even this group, who was going to actually drive his Bronco down to the scene, didn't have time. They actually just switched the plates, moved the Bronco to the left-hand side of the gate at Rockingham, away from the 360 side, where that 360 was that said 360 Rockingham, and just moved and just took the plates with it and drove down there. But they also took a mask, which one of them wore during that. And I think not too long after they were using these at Halloween, Halloween mask with O.J. Simpson. Well, one of the white supremacists actually made up a mask which they wore just in case they were spotted driving back. And that's exactly what happened. They almost ran into a vehicle which was driven by somebody and who went to the prosecution and testified in the grand jury. Yet Marsha Clark saw a problem between that and the 1040 and 1045 noise, and that if that was O.J., he couldn't have made that noise, and that couldn't be the right person.
Wasn't that Jill Shively?
That's correct.
And we should note again that they had taken the license plates, according to your informant, this group
yes.
had taken the license plates off of O.J. Simpson's Bronco, put it on another Bronco, correct?
That's correct.
And had a fellow with an O.J. Simpson mask on. He's codenamed Blade in
that's
the book.
That's right.
And he was the person who actually did the killing of Nicole and Ron.
That's also correct. The this it sounds bizarre, but, you know, it's no more bizarre than this. What occurred in Helter Skelter, and, you know, I had nothing about that's in the book, but only because I was doing some research after, where Manson murdered all those people strictly and called and used the word pigs and everything to start a race war. So as bizarre as it may seem there, it was even more bizarre when Bugliosi tried the case, and the only motive was to start a race war. That's exactly what was transpiring here.
And there was a fellow reportedly with connections to military intelligence and possibly even the CIA, a fellow named Ed Butler, who had been instrumental in helping to set up the circumstances where Lee Harvey Oswald was interviewed and talked about his commie leanings. He also was writing for Patrick Frawley's West Coast paper, a paper called Aware, and was talking about the Tate-LaBianca and the Tate-LaBianca killings as obviously the work of black militants, possibly the Black Panthers. And although Manson appears to have had a role in that, the actual core of that operation were people from the Aryan Brotherhood, a neo-Nazi prison gang.
Yeah. They wanted to blame the Panthers, that the plan that the Panthers would go in and murder whites, and then the whites would murder blacks, and they would, and then Manson would take over. He was going to run off to the Death Valley and wait until they all killed each other off, and then he would take over.
Back to Operation Thunderbolt. Now, one of the major goals, as we've already stated, was dividing black and white, and that appears to have been enormously successful. They were also out to discredit the judicial system, to destroy people's faith in that, to get it changed, which would ultimately first adversely affect minorities, and then, as you point out, later other people. One of the most interesting aspects of your book, to me, Stephen, is that one of the targets, again, not one of the victims, but one of the targets, along with O.J. and Nicole, was law enforcement itself, including and especially the LAPD.
That's right. It's because if you can create enough dissension amongst the people with distrust of the LAPD, you'd have, every time there was an incident, you could have the tinder for a giant fire in Los Angeles. So by creating a great deal of mistrust of the LAPD, and there are, I guess there's enough individuals in the LAPD that, you know, fit the blueprint of white supremacy, or with the thought process that goes along with it, that it wouldn't take much to do. And they've succeeded extremely well. They've, you know, they've created this cloud over the police departments across the country now. Every time something happens, people think of this case.
One of the things that was most intriguing to me about the book, no pun intended, the LAPD insider who was meant to lead the investigation in the direction of O.J. Simpson, codenamed the Dark German by your informant, is described as having some explosive information which could blow the lid off the LAPD. Your informant also discusses the mock trial in Phoenix, which he says was monitored by basically white supremacists within the Patriots networks down there.
That's right. And see, that's another intriguing thing. What you've got is the media, for whatever reason, has aided and abetted this, well, the cause Here you have a trial that they blame the not guilty on a primarily black jurist and saying that was the problem. Where in this September 1st release of this mock jury that was set up by the prosecution to try all of the trial balloons, and they had the Bronco chase, they had the knife he bought, they had the money that was in there, they had the disguise, that everything. They didn't have the racist remarks of Mark Furman. They didn't have the glove that didn't fit. And they found, 12-3, found him innocent of the charges. Yet the media never, ever, has ever mentioned anything about that.
And that was not about equally split between black and white.
That's right. Well, actually, it was 9 black, 8 white.
Okay. But almost 50-50. The informant mentions that the generals, in other words, the commanders of this operation, their identities known only to the deliverer, now apparently dispatched by the foreign group that was financing this, had made provisions to turn even an innocent verdict to their advantage. Your informant also told you that the Laura Hart McKinney tapes, those shocking recordings of Mark Furman, who may or may not have been the dark German, that it was the cause people who leaked the existence of those tapes to the defense.
That's just what they did, according to the informant. In other words, when they saw things were not going just right, and they saw there was going to be a problem, they figured another method of actually coming up with the same... Final result would be for those tapes to get out and to hear Mark Furman, who had said he had never used the N-word, caught. And that would have been just as explosive, and they felt would have caused a riot. Ito, luckily, I guess, allowed the people to hear it, because otherwise it would have just been leaked to the papers, and you would have had, another burning in L.A., there's still this troubling thing about the civil trial. You know, if he gets convicted in the civil trial by primarily an all-white jury, you may still see that. You may still see this group come out from under the rocks and say, yep, here we got it. You convicted him, and he didn't do it.
I saw an interview with David Duke where he was talking about black racism having been behind the acquittal of O.J. Simpson. But going back, this was very recent, this by way of exploiting this as a recruiting tool or an ideological tool, again, we should make the point that according to your informant, the Laura Hart McKinney tapes and those shocking interviews with Mark Furman, who may or may not have been the dark German, again, the code name for the Nazi insider in this operation, they had several inside of the LAPD, that those tapes were deliberately leaked to the defense. Do you think that might have been, this is speculative, the bombshell that the dark German had on the department?
Oh, I think so.
Okay. Stephen, we're getting down to the last few minutes of the interview. Let's move forward from Operation Thunderbolt per se and to some of the evidentiary tributaries leading in the direction of Oklahoma City, which your informant says was an operation by the same group.
That's a fair summation of what we have there. The same groups, same ideology to start a race war, but also at the same time, they distrust the government. Their belief is that the government is run by Jews, mm-hmm. by the Zog, and that Turner Diaries, which is the blueprint for all of this, and starting in Los Angeles, which is their prime area, was going to expand, and what they were going to do is first you blow up a building there, and then you blow up another building someplace else, and you get reaction to it by the government, and then you what they're looking for, and what they actually looked for, even in that Freeman situation, was the military to act. In other words, tanks to be brought in again,
mm-hmm.
Which would have, in fact, there's a news article that talked about if they'd have brought in tanks, like they did in Waco,
right.
The groups, the militia groups around, were told to come to their aid. In fact, there was a news release out of West Palm Beach on that very same topic.
Right, and I've talked about it on these airwaves. Now, in terms of the connections between this alleged operation and Oklahoma City, which, again, your informant says was also pulled off by this same nexus.
Mm-hmm.
We've already noted that Stephen Colburn, who may or may not have been the Colby, the blood and DNA specialist who got O.J.'s blood, was an acquaintance of McVeigh's. We've also noted that Dennis Mahone, who was recruiting LAPD and L.A. Sheriff's people for the White Knights, was also tied in with Timothy McVeigh.
And Dennis Mahone had traveled to Europe, and the they feel that the there are some blasting materials that were used that came from overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And McVeigh had placed some phone calls to one of the sites that Dennis Mahone frequents in Oklahoma.
Is that Elohim City?
That's correct.
And one of the security people there, James Ellison, was a governmental witness in a 1988 alleged conspiracy by white supremacists, including people from the Order, to blow up the Oklahoma City building. Louis Beam, the originator of leaderless resistance, was charged and acquitted in that. His attorney, Kirk Lyons, has been the attorney for Andreas Strassmeier, a German who was also one of the security people at Elohim City, and McVeigh called him.
And Kirk Lyons is head of what is known as CAUSE. That's the title of that group. Now, whether they this was why he used it, but CAUSE is a group of legal people, which is also written about in Turner's diaries. They form a legal group to handle one part, but CAUSE actually went ahead and fought for their rights in the Waco and the Weaver incident, etc. And CAUSE went in the Freeman location to arbitrate. So, and Kirk Lyons is part of, I think he heads up CAUSE. So
which may or may not be the group alluded to.
That's
by
right.
Informant.
It's strictly a, but it's the name is the same.
Okay. You speculate about possible connections between Operation Thunderbolt, between Oklahoma City, and things that have taken place since. We've already touched briefly on the burnings of black churches. You speculate there may have been a connection between these elements and the derailing of a Sunset Limited train in Arizona. Really?
In Hayden, Arizona. Well, there's a message that was SOG, S-O-G. Mm-hmm. Well, in the book, actually, there's a Navy SEAL knife, which has a gray material on it. Very similar to a gray material found on Nicole Simpson's throat.
Mm-hmm.
They, they said there was a gray material. They didn't know what it was. Well, there's a coating on this Navy SEAL knife, which is made by a manufacturer, SOG.
That's S-O-G, not to be confused with ZOG.
That's right.
It stands for Special Operations Group. It's a Navy SEAL knife.
It's a genuine Navy SEAL made for the military.
And you speculate that this may have something to do, the
code sending name, a signal.
The Special Operations Group, because this group uses a highly clandestine symbolic intelligence methodology for communications. It was also on the second anniversary of the founding of this group. Stephen, we're almost out of time. How can people order this remarkable book and find out more about what we've been talking about?
Currently, there's an 800 number, which is 800-356-9315. The book is selling at $14.95.
We can't mention prices on the air, but once again, that 800 number?
It's 800-356-9315.
800-356-9315,
and they can go to the local bookstores and ask for it. It is listed, and they are starting to ship books out.
All righty, we have been speaking with Stephen Wirth, along with Carl Jaspers, the author of Blood Oath, The Conspiracy to Murder Nicole Brown Simpson, soft cover edition Rainbow Books, copyright 1996, distributed by the Lee Salters Company. Stephen, I want to thank you and your co-author so much for your courage in providing us with this remarkable book, which may provide the foundations for a more intelligent investigation into the O.J. Simpson case.
Thank you for having us on.
For Stephen Wirth, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening, and so long.